Welcome to the Tech Policy Podcast, your source for policy rants and raves and the occasional but rare humor from Tech Freedom, your Washington, D.C. advocate for the freedom to tinker and innovate. I'm Evan Schwarzstraber, your host. On today's show, the thorny issue of encryption. Tech companies like Apple say that strong encryption is necessary to secure Americans' data, but law enforcement agencies like the FBI are saying that they're going dark and that terrorists are using encrypted messaging apps to plan attacks and they can't see what's going on. So how do we solve this issue, or is there even a solution? Joining me to discuss this is Ryan Hageman. He is the Technology and Civil Liberties Policy Analyst at the Niskanen Center, a libertarian think tank based in Washington, D.C. Ryan, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Evan.
And joining me is Crypto Something, Baron Soka, President of Tech Freedom. Baron, thank you for joining us.
Crypto Libertarian.
So fake Libertarian.
Well, I'm not the one that's rooting for Bernie Sanders here.
Well, we'll get into that issue, certainly, if we have time.
Although I might be, depending on what happens.
All right, so listeners, you can guess now which one of us is supporting Bernie Sanders, and then maybe by the end of the episode we'll reveal the answer. So today, Representative Michael McCaul, the chairman of the Homeland Security Committee in the House, and Senator Mark Warner, a Democrat from Virginia, they announced the National Commission on Security and Technology Challenges. They revealed a bill that would create a commission to study the issue of encryption and other digital security issues like cybersecurity. So, Ryan, what exactly is this commission?
So the intention of this commission is to bring together a wide array of stakeholders in order to examine the intersection of security and digital communications technologies and the challenges that they pose for law enforcement in the digital age.
So why are we seeing this commission? I mean, technologists have said that there's no such thing as a backdoor into encryption, that only the good guys can access. They've really kind of dug their heels in on this issue. So what does the chairman hope to accomplish with this commission?
Well, I think the reason that Chairman McCaul decided to forge ahead with this commission as a potential solution to the ongoing debate surrounding encryption and other challenges that law enforcement is currently facing is because most of the debate has been largely rhetorically charged and very emotional. And even though a lot of people claim that there's no clear solution to what's going on here, the chairman and I personally think that the best path forward on this issue is to basically sit everyone down at a table and just start talking through some of the issues and concerns that everyone has.
So is one of the issues that this commission is a safer alternative to some of the more drastic measures that we've seen proposed by Senator Dianne Feinstein from California, Senator Richard Burr from North Carolina? They've put out a bill that would just mandate that tech companies put backdoors into their products. So do you see this commission as just a lesser of two evils?
Quite frankly, I see this commission as an ideal resting place for this debate. Certainly what we're trying to avoid is pushing through any sort of knee-jerk legislation that Senators Feinstein or Burr would propose, especially in the wake of a new terrorist attack or a new event like the Apple v. FBI kerfuffle that we've seen unfolding over the last week and a half or so. And I think that I share the chairman's concerns that since we're not making any headway on these issues in the public forum, that what is really needed here is for Congress to take some level of decisive action and get all of the people who have something to gain as well as something to lose in this debate to just sit down and talk through the issues that all parties have.
So there are privacy advocates who are really concerned that this commission is not just a conversation, that it's not just bringing stakeholders to the table to discuss the issue, that it really is just a Trojan horse for anti-encryption legislation down the road, because they say if there is no technological solution now, then there's really no point in having this conversation, that the only something bad could come of it. What would you say to those concerns?
So the issue here is not specifically focused on encryption. I think that a lot of privacy advocates are concerned, and probably rightly so, that this commission could end up advocating for solutions and policy recommendations that maybe would be a first step towards some really bad legislation on the encryption front. But it's worth noting that, again, encryption is not the only issue at stake here. We're looking at the larger issue of security in the digital ecosystem in the modern age. And while I share many of the concerns of those privacy advocates who don't necessarily view this commission as anything more than your standard run-of-the-mill blue ribbon commission that isn't actually slated to do anything, I think it's worth giving moderate compromise and bipartisan paths forward a chance to come up with at least something in this debate.
Yeah, it's interesting to see how privacy advocates are concerned that the commission might actually accomplish something, whereas a lot of national security hawks who do want backdoors into encryption, they're criticizing the commission because they say it doesn't go far enough. They say that commissions established by Congress are generally pointless. There's a lot of talk, not a lot of action. So if anything, that could be encouraging to privacy advocates that all they're doing is establishing a commission and not proposing something else.
Absolutely. And I think it's also worth noting that this commission has a very wide bipartisan swath of support, not just amongst those in civil society, but we're talking about law enforcement itself has signed off on the idea of this commission. Many members of the House and the Senate are supportive of this. And in fact, Apple and the Wall Street Journal editorial board last week came out supporting this as the ideal path forward in forging ahead on some sort of solution or compromise to the ongoing debate.
Yeah, I guess it's a good sign that some of the most vocal opponents of the commission are those who really want to do much more to curtail encryption, like Senator John McCain, Feinstein, and Burr. Barron?
Yeah, I'd say three things. So first, Daniel Patrick Moynihan always said that you're entitled to your own opinions, but not your own facts. He was very data-driven. He was very much famous for his own work on blue ribbon commissions to study problems like, in his case, welfare reform. But here, I think you have the same sort of problem you had with the 9/11 commission. A lot of the debate really is about the facts, and we're not going to have any constructive discussion in D.C. and certainly not any kind of legislative agreement until we actually are operating from a common set of facts. And I think one of those facts would be that when it comes to the question of end-to-end encryption, it really is, as I've said before, binary. You either have it or you don't. But there are a bunch of other security issues here that are not binary, that operate along the spectrum. And Apple is currently dealing with one of those. The Apple case is not itself actually about encryption. It's about the feature that Apple has built into the phone that locks the phone after 10 attempts to log in to it, and then automatically deletes all the data on the phone. That ties into encryption in some sense because it means that feature stops law enforcement from doing a brute force attack on the device's encryption. But it's actually very different from the ongoing conversation that we're having, which is, again, about end-to-end data in-transit communication systems. And I'd just say the third thing is one of the reasons that Apple is taking the position they're taking that a commission is worth pursuing is that their legal argument in the case that's currently pending in California hinges primarily as a threshold matter on their argument that Congress did not intend to cover this sort of scenario when it last enacted law about this back in 1994. That's the law of CALEA we've talked about. And so their argument has to be that if there is a problem here, it should be dealt with by Congress and not the courts. So they're really trying to kick this over to the courts and from the courts to Congress. And that means really having a commission do it so that we don't legislate in a panic.
And it's probably not a coincidence that Apple, signed on to the commission right after they got hit with the court order, because I think they see this as an obvious calming down situation where let's have a conversation, let's bring stakeholders to the table. But having the FBI try every single possible avenue it could get to undermine digital security is not a better alternative. So we've seen the FBI try to go to the White House for support, we've seen FBI try to go through Congress, and we've seen the FBI try to go through the courts. So I think Apple really thinks that we just need to have a conversation. And Barron, you mentioned the importance of having a common set of facts. Privacy advocates who are skeptical of the commission say, we resolved this debate in the 90s. There is no such thing as a perfect golden key and things like that. But clearly that didn't stick because we have presidential candidates on both sides, on the Democratic side and the Republican side, who don't seem to share that consensus. So clearly having a commission that creates a, you know, maybe it affirms the same facts from the 90s, but it at least has an official finding that candidates can point to, and maybe that's one of the advantages.
And I just want to reiterate that that specific issue you were just discussing is the narrow question of whether we allow end-to-end encryption. We either do or we don't. But there is a host of other questions, and I think that what you are likely to see come out of this commission is the technologists really having their say on that question, and then recognizing that on other questions like this, there are actually middle ground solutions. It would not be the end of the world, for example, if your phone locked out bad guys after 10 attempts, but law enforcement could still get a court order and get into that. That would, you might think that's not a good idea, but it's at least a separate question from the question of whether we're going to allow encryption. That's the kind of thing that you're going to see this commission, I think, deal with alongside the binary issue of yes or no, do we have strong end-to-end encryption?
And certainly the commission is going to deal with more issues than just encryption, but a lot of privacy advocates are concerned based on statements that Chairman McCall made over the summer in July that seemed to be very critical of encryption. They seem to be skeptical of encryption. He referred to it as a problem. But Ryan, are there reasons to be encouraged despite Chairman McCall's rhetoric over the summer about this commission and whether it will be fair to your opinion on encryption and whether it will not just be a play for law enforcement to get what it wants?
Oh, absolutely. I have reviewed the text of this legislation, and one of the major concerns that many privacy advocates have thrown my way is the fact that there includes in the text a possibility for the creation of a classified annex as well as security clearance protocols in place for members of the commission. However, if you read the text carefully, it is very clear from that reading that the classified annex is not mandatory. It is optional, as are the security clearances. Those decisions are specifically left to the commission to decide, not to Congress and not to any outside body, but to the commissioners who will be sitting on this commission themselves. And so that, I think, is the big concern that privacy advocates have had.
So they were concerned that privacy advocates who don't want to have to get a security clearance but still want to have their voice heard on the commission would not be willing to get a security clearance in order to have a seat at the table?
Not just not willing, but in certain cases, perhaps not even able.
Right.
We saw recently that Ashkan Soltani was not able to ascend to his post in the White House because he was not able to pass a security clearance. And I think that has a lot of folks in the privacy community a little bit concerned about whether or not the right people are going to be sitting on this commission, especially technologists, many of whom probably do not want to go through the security clearance process.
So what do you see as the ideal outcome of this commission? What are you hoping the findings will say?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. I don't really like to pontificate about the future. When we're talking about ideal outcomes, worst case scenarios, most likely scenarios, I always default to the reality that in a world where carpenters rise from the dead, truly anything is possible. So I think we should both temper our expectations for the good and the bad in this commission. Now, what I can say explicitly is that the recommendations and the reports that this commission the recommendations and the reports that are mandated by the commission are largely focused around a relatively objective assessment of facts as they relate to looking at the challenges that law enforcement is encountering increasingly in its investigations as it relates to digital security protocols, including but not limited to encryption. But there's also a component of this commission that demands a report on the economic and commercial value of cryptography to the U.S. economy. And I think that's an important issue and dimension of this debate that has really not gotten the type of attention it deserves.
So is the makeup of the commission going to make sure that all of these issues, like the economic impact of anti-encryption legislation we've talked about on the podcast before, the importance of companies like Apple having an image that their products are secure and that it can really, when two-thirds of their business is overseas, it could really hurt them if people in Europe or other countries around the world think that their products are tainted. So let's talk about the makeup of the commission. Is it stacked in the favor of privacy advocates? Is it stacked in the favor of law enforcement? Is it somewhere in between? What do you think is going to happen with that?
Well, again, based on my reading of the text, I think this is an incredibly fair makeup of the commission. So we have eight. So as you said earlier, there are 16 members to be appointed to this commission. Eight will be appointed by the Speaker of the House and the Senate Majority Leader, with one of those eight to serve as the chairman. Eight more will be appointed by the minority leader in the House and Senate, and then there will be one ex officio appointment by the president who will serve as a non-voting member. And the eight individuals who are to make up this commission are to be taken from eight separate industries and issue focus areas. So first, we have cryptologists and computer scientists. Second, we have economists and people who focus on commerce. Third, we have federal law enforcement officers. Then there is the consumer tech sector, the enterprise tech sector, state and local law enforcement, the intelligence community, and finally, the privacy and civil liberties community.
So that's a lot of stakeholders, and they certainly span a lot of different aspects of society, including law enforcement, economics, technology, etc.
Yes, absolutely. And I know for a fact that this is what Chairman McCaul has always intended, is not for this to be stacked one way or the other, but for this commission to truly be an inclusive, bipartisan table at which all relevant stakeholders can sit to actually have their conversations heard.
But Ryan, this isn't a normal partisan debate. It's not clear that Democrats fall on one side or that Republicans fall on the other. In fact, both parties are quite divided. And if this is up to the leadership of each party to make those specific appointments, do we have any sense of what the overall balance of the commission might end up being?
Again, I think that's pontification on future events. I would estimate that we will see the type of balance that privacy advocates are pushing for. But the reality is that this is the way that a commission that is to receive bipartisan support needs to be structured. It needs to include Democratic leadership. It needs to include Republican leadership, all having their say and their picks, maybe influenced by privacy advocates, maybe influenced by law enforcement. But the reality here is, as we include more and more people in this commission from a wider diaspora of specialties, we're more likely to find the common ground that we've been looking for in this debate.
One of the most interesting things about the encryption debate and other aspects of tech policy is, as Barron mentioned, that these issues don't always fall along just traditional partisan lines, conservative, liberal, left, right, Republican, Democrat. I mean, for example, you've got the dynamic duo of national security hawkishness, which is Richard Burr, a Republican from North Carolina, Dianne Feinstein, a Democrat from California. You have representatives like Chairman McCaul, who seem to be kind of somewhere in the middle and trying to create a dialogue. Then you've got representatives like Daryl Issa, Republican in California, who very strongly came out against any type of backdoor to encryption and said it would be really dangerous. So, and Democrats like Ron Wyden, a similar place. So it's really interesting. What makes tech policy interesting in general is that it's not such a typical partisan area, and that there really is a lot of interesting, strange bedfellows. And we've seen that with your group and Tech Freedom and left-right coalitions. And it's kind of fun to work with people who you generally don't agree with on other issues.
Yeah, and you know, quite frankly, I think this commission is sort of a microcosmic example of what we need more of here inside the Beltway, which is compromise, bipartisan solutions, and people from across the aisle coming together on specific issues on which we have a relative agreement on, in order to advance the best policy recommendations that we can possibly advance for the American people, for security, and for continued economic growth.
So, what should listeners be looking out for with the development of the commission? Let's talk about the timeline. When do you expect that we'll start hearing names of commissioners and appointments? And then when would you estimate that we'll have a finding?
Well, there you go, asking for those pontifications on future events, Evan. I don't know, quite frankly. We are in an interesting time right now. It is a presidential election cycle. Congress has a truncated legislative calendar. They all get out on July 15th. And there aren't a whole lot of bills that are currently going through the House and Senate, which are must-pass bills, aside from the FAA reauthorization. So it's difficult to say whether or not this is likely to be packed into a must-pass bill like the FAA reauth, or if maybe we see it wait until after Congress returns in September and gets packed into something else. What I do know, based on the reading of the text, however, is that the commission is slated to commence 60 days after enactment, assuming it is indeed passed, at which point there will be a six-month report as well as various interim reports as the commission assents or dissents from agreeing to do. And then the final report will be issued no later, it says, than 12 months out from the starting date of the commission.
Yeah, so the bottom line, I would guess, is that the bill will probably move pretty quickly in the next few months, and you'll see that 12-month stop clock. So you'll see a report come out next summer. The Trump administration or the Sanders administration will then have to deal with this issue. And in all seriousness, I think it's going to come out and say that there is no middle ground on end-to-end encryption, but it's probably going to deal with the Apple situation very specifically. And I think you're going to see some standard that is going to be probably a little more demanding upon law enforcement than what the law enforcement wants under the All Writs Act, that will probably say something like that they can get access under certain circumstances, but there has to be a greater balancing of interests, and maybe that it should be done as much as possible behind closed doors to minimize security vulnerabilities, so that, for example, Apple holds on to the software it writes instead of giving it to the FBI.
Certainly, this debate does not happen in a tech policy bubble, and developments in the Middle East, the war against terror, which seems to just go on and on and on, and whatever ISIS does, and God forbid there's another attack, those things will all impact this debate. And it seems that Chairman McCall, one of his goals with this commission is to make sure that there's a conversation in place before something bad happens, if it happens, because as we've seen with the Patriot Act after 9/11, the danger for knee-jerk legislation in a fit of panic is very, very real. Well, that's it for today's show. My guest has been Ryan Hageman. He is the Technology and Civil Liberties Policy Analyst at the Niskanen Center. Ryan, thank you for joining me.
As always, Evan, it is an immense pleasure.
And thank you, Barron. Crypto libertarian seems to be excited for either Trump or Sanders. Listeners, I think you have your answer. Barron, thanks for joining.
I'm not excited at all in any way. I'm done.
Well, there's that optimism that we were hoping for in 2016. Find us on Twitter at Tech Freedom or on Facebook.com/Tech Freedom. Find this podcast in the iTunes store on your favorite podcast app. If you like what you hear, please leave us a review. It will help us and help others find the show. Thank you for listening.
The Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.